The third and or fourth career, if you want to consider box boy as your first career, and radio announcer and cop and real estate, now William E. McClintock, writer.
The real name.
Yes.
Finally surfaces.
Yes.
Although I
was going to ask you, Sarge, I assume came from your father's military career?
Yeah, it does. Most people assume that I myself am holding on to some previously held military identity, but I'm not. Or that I was a sergeant in the sheriff's office and I'm holding on to that nickname. No, I'm not. My dad was career Army, WW2. When I was born, he was a sergeant. And they tagged me with Sarge from the time I was in the crib. It was Big Sarge and Little Sarge. So I've always been called Sarge. Now, very late in life, I'm back to my real name, William E. Well, my friends like you, Dave, call me Sarge. They always will call me Sarge. Yeah. But for purposes of writing novels, I use my real name, William E. McClintock, yeah.
And how did that get started? First of all, now you've left Washington State, you've left Montana. And, of course, Lena had passed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know, did she pass in Montana or in Arizona?
Montana. She never saw Arizona.
So you head south. You become a snowbird.
Yeah. Well, I bought a travel trailer, and I thought I was just going to be a road guy. I'll just pull a trailer behind me, and I'll visit places for the rest of my life. I wanted to go see Tombstone. I thought I'd probably just winter out in Tombstone, spend the winter there, then come spring, maybe pull my travel trailer back up into Wyoming, maybe head east, maybe go visit the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
That's on my bucket list. Civil War battlefields back east, that kind of thing. That was my plan with a travel trailer. I was just going to be a traveling guy. But I got stuck in Tombstone. I ended up liking Tombstone very, very much. Love the history there. As a retired deputy sheriff, the Tombstone Marshal's office snapped me up, and I went to work for them as a Tombstone Marshal, and that held me there for a while. Let me tell you, it's fun being a marshal in Tombstone.
You're as much a historian as you are a law enforcement, I'm sure.
Down there on the wall in the Tombstone Marshal's office, there's a big picture of Virgil Earp, who was the first marshal in Tombstone. The history is very much there. It's very much alive. And I always felt it was a real privilege to be part of that line, part of that lineage. I love being a marshal in Tombstone. So that held me there. I ended up staying in Tombstone for damn near 5 years. I thought I was just going to be there for the winter and move on, but I ended up there for about 5 years. At some point, Dave, I finally just got real with myself, and I said, okay, you know what? I guess you're here to stay. You're not the traveling guy you once were. You're not going to go back and visit the Civil War battlefields in an RV. So I ended up buying a house, and I'm there now.
Back to the Cole Matthews and the books,
the writing,
the Widowmaker.
Yeah, writing. Yeah. Writing. How did that start?
Yeah.
That was
at no point in your career do I hear any writing other than maybe a commercial or two in radio.
Yeah. No. And I never enjoyed writing copy. I can tell you that. But I always thought that I was natively a pretty good writer. And I always intended to write a book someday. And so it was largely a bucket list kind of thing. I wanted to write a novel. I had no pretensions about it or expectations for it. I didn't expect to make any money at it, and that was not my motive. The thing is, I wanted to have written a novel. So, okay, you're going to write a novel. Then the next question is, what novel? What are you going to write? What genre? And I decided to write a Western for several reasons, chief among them, it seemed like an easy novel to write. A Western seemed like an easy genre to start with. So don't make a scale model of the HMS Victory to begin with. Start out with a rowboat or something and then build up to a bigger, better, grander thing. So I started off with a Western because it seemed simple, it seemed easy, and because I know a lot about the history, I know a lot about the weapons, I know a lot about violent people and men, the subculture of violence.
And you're living in Tombstone, where a lot of this history took place.
Well, not when I started writing that book.
Well, you weren't in Tombstone.
No. I was in Montana at the time.
Oh, okay.
I knew a lot about the subculture of violence and law enforcement. And so I started writing a Western. And I was right on all counts. It was a very easy genre. Now, mitigating against it in my mind was the fact that I don't particularly like Westerns. I didn't write a Western because I like them, because I don't. I think they're simple. I think that if you've read one, you've read them all, basically. I know a lot of people who idolize Louis L'Amour, but I'm telling you, if you've read one Louis L'Amour, you've read them all. I sat down to write a Western in spite of that, and I decided to make it more of a movie. You know, I had a movie in my mind, and it was not a Louis L'Amour read one, read them all thing. So I wrote it. I wrote a Western. I thought it turned out to be very successful, and I enjoyed it. But then I was done. I said, in my mind, I'm done with Westerns. This was just a starter. Now I'm going to do something else. Maybe I'll tackle a Tom Clancy type thing, or Lee Child, you know, Jack Reacher, something. But then a funny thing happened. During the writing of Widowmaker, toward the end, a character appeared, a little female Pinkerton detective that I just loved. I just fell in love with that character. I really liked her. There's very little of her in that book. So I decided, okay, I'll do one more. I'll do a sequel to Widowmaker, and I'll really focus on her. I want to explore her more. I want to get to know her more. So I did. I wrote a second book. It's called The Hunt for Bloody Bill Anderson. And she's central in that book. She's a very big part of that book.
With Cole Matthews.
Right. He's in it too. They're kind of a team. And then I said, okay, now I'm done with Westerns. That's it. No more. And I made sure of that. I killed off Cole Matthews. I got rid of him in the same spirit that, in the same vein exactly that Conan Doyle killed off Sherlock Holmes. He didn't want to write about him anymore. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I killed off my protagonist, and now I'm going to move to something else. But I've got a friend in L.A. She does a talk show on the radio there, KFI, who knows a lot about the business of writing, publishing, getting an agent, the business of writing. She knows a lot about that. And she said, no, you can't stop. You've got to write at least one more Cole Matthews. And I said, why? And
how? You've already killed him off.
She said, a series of books sells by a factor of 10 better than just a couple of books by themselves. A series of books is by definition, she says, three or more with the same protagonist. So you got to write one more. So, okay. And the answer to how you do that, if you've killed off your hero, is you write a prequel. I'm more than midway through that book right now, and it's a prequel to the first book. The first book, Widowmaker, takes place. It begins with him riding out of Mexico across the Rio Grande into El Paso. That's the beginning. Mm-hmm. The book I'm writing now will end with him riding out of Mexico across the Rio Grande into El Paso.
I see. Okay. Well, I've enjoyed the first two and can't wait for the third.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you. It's been unusually, unexpectedly successful, and I've had a great fun with it. And I've discovered one more thing that I do pretty well.
You do very well.
Yeah, thank you.
You do very well. And that also brings me to, you're also self-published, per se.
Yeah.
Even though you would never know it by the looks of the presentation on the online and all of that. But how does that work, and how well does it work, and do you use it more as an avenue to get to a bigger agent, or how does that work?
It works very, very well, because what I'm selling books to people who have Kindles or Nooks or some other digital e-reader. If you don't have one, you can't read my books, and I'm sorry about that. I don't like that aspect of it, but it works very, very well, because if I had submitted my book to a publisher, let's say Random House or somebody, and they published it, they would have given me new writer, unknown, no track record, no publishing history. They would have given me about a $2,500 advance on that book. And at that, they probably wouldn't have made any money. Most first books do not sell very well. Mm-hmm. When a publisher takes you on and gives you an advance, he's betting on the future. He's betting that your second book or your third book will begin to make money. And that's what they're betting on. You get a $2,500 advance, and that's all the money you're going to see for that book. And then your royalties on books that do sell with a publisher is something in the vicinity of 7.5% to 11%. It depends. Stephen King probably gets 50. I don't know, but I would have gotten no more than 7.5% per book. Self-publishing via the internet, via Amazon, I get I get 95%.
Oh, they keep a nickel and...
Right. And you end up making far more money faster than you would from a... well, if your book sells. The first premise is it has to be well written. It has to be a good book. Junk is not going to make you any
money. But how do people find it initially? I mean, where do they know about William E. McClintock and that he's even written a book?
You know, these are very intelligent questions, Dave. You must have been in radio. The answer is you have to make your presence known. There are various ways to do that. You may notice that I'm on Facebook and I have a website. Mm-hmm. The sole purpose of my website, which is largely a kind of a history blog, mm-hmm. The sole purpose of that website is to promote my books. Mm-hmm. So people come to the website, hopefully, you know, if they find it interesting, then they're going to say, I see this guy has books for sale. Well, maybe I'll buy one. And it begins to snowball that way. Social media is a big part of it. Facebook is a big part of my marketing. I shamelessly promote my books on my Facebook page.
Yeah, you do. No, I'm sorry. You do well.
And I shamelessly promote my website. But it all goes back to the books. It's kind of like that triad that Walt Disney pioneered. He had the three big legs of the Disney empire were Disneyland, the Disney TV show, and Buena Vista, the movies, movie, the movies. Yeah. And each one shamelessly cross-plugged the other. I mean, that
sure.
And that's what I try to do with Facebook and my webpage and my books. So that's how it works. And if your books are good, if they deserve to sell, then they will. And you'll end up making far more money via Amazon and Nook and Kindle than you ever would with a
and
publisher.
And hopefully Google.
Yes, yes. Thanks to you, I am on Google, yeah. The other aspect, and it's equally important as everything I just said, is that if I were with a publisher like Knopf or Random House or something, after a year, that book's out of print. It's not going to stay in print forever. Mm-hmm. It's going to sell maybe 1,200 copies, mm-hmm. and then it's out of print forever.
Unlike a Clancy that goes through 40 printings
right.
at a time.
Right.
The first guy, the new guy, is not going to get that.
Right. Even well-known established, I mean, not all of, even Stephen King's, not all of his books are still
sure.
in print.
Yeah.
But my book will always be in print up there on Amazon. Widowmaker mm-hmm. will always be there. It will always be generating money for me mm-hmm. until the end of my life. And that, I must say, I mentioned it second, but it's really the most important thing to me about being mm-hmm. self-published, so-called.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.